I've had the opportunity to live in lots of places, in lots of different houses, but in the course of my life, I have lived in three really old houses. First one up there in the left-hand corner is the parsonage of the church my dad served for many years, Swedona Lutheran Church, and that was the parsonage. It's over 100 years old. I actually took that picture back when I was a teenager back in the 80s. But that was that matter of fact, that first window, those two windows on that corner of that house was my bedroom up there. And that was a big old house, and I'm pretty sure it was haunted. So I don't know why, it always felt a little scary in some places. But that I grew up in that house. Now the one down in the corner is the house that I currently have up in northern Wisconsin, and that was built in the turn of the 20th century when it was a sawmill town. So the sawmill was set up shop down by the creek down at the end of the road here. And what they wanted to do is to have loggers. They built a bunch of what basically was a company town of probably 20 houses. And this is one of those sawmill houses from the early 20th century. And once they cut down all the trees, the sawmill closed. Imagine that. So I believe that house also might be haunted. I know, it's like weird. I don't know what's going on. And then finally, up in the corner, it's hard to see, but there's a little blur on there, and that's the house we currently live in the Marin Headlands. And that house is also over 100 years old, because I found photographic evidence of it being at least there prior to 1904. And so it is a non-commissioned officer's quarters housing duplex. I didn't even know they made duplexes 100 years ago. But so I've lived in all these houses, and they all have one thing in common. No, not that they're haunted. They all have basements. I know that's a foreign concept out here. But all three of these houses have basements. And, you know, and that's the thing is for me, having a basement growing up was not a big deal in Illinois, but actually having a basement in Northern California seems kind of like a novelty, especially a 100-year-old basement. But I don't have a garage, so my storage options are limited. So I actually like having a basement. And in colder climates, you have to build a foundation below the freeze line, or the house is not as structurally sound as it should be. Now, basements are only good if they don't flood. That's the big downside. And I've had basements flood in my lifetime, and it is no fun. But it's all about the foundation. The main purpose of a basement is all about foundations, the thing in which you build the house on. And as you heard this morning, Jesus is talking at the end of the greatest sermon ever preached. We're still talking about it 2,000 years later. He's talking about foundations. Now, I've always been moved by this set of verses as Jesus concludes his sermon. But here's something you may not know, especially I think is really fascinating, is the fact that both readings this morning from Ezekiel 33 and Matthew 7 are not found in something we call the lectionary. That's the what we would say the assigned readings for every Sunday. There's assigned readings if you choose to use them. And there's a three-year cycle, and it just repeats itself. So what I'm telling you is what was read today is that if you came to a church year in and year out and the pastor only followed the weekly prescribed readings, you would never, ever, ever hear what you just heard read in church, ever. I mean, isn't that a shame? I mean, think about that for a second. You could go to church your entire life as a Lutheran and never hear the end of the Sermon on the Mount and never anything of that portion of Scripture from Ezekiel. Now, all the good people of Bethel who are over at Mount Cross are missing this. It's okay, I like you guys better anyway, so it's fine. Don't tell them, okay? I'm kidding. Come on, guys, lighten up. It's okay. So we heard Jesus say, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like the wise person who built their house on the rock. The rains came, the streams rose, and the winds blew, and it beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundations on the rock. So if this is a summary, what Jesus is saying at the end of this sermon, he's saying, okay, you heard a bunch of things today, and what I want you to know is that if you take the time to live into the teachings that come directly from the heart of God, you will be more prepared when the storms of life come. Now, what I find fascinating about this is when you see this, there's the reading. I like the Lincoln Log like model. In case like the words are too much, just look at the picture, right? Is that when you think about this, the word Jesus uses is practice, which is the theme of the Labor Day retreat. Practice, not perfect. So that's the theme we're working with. But this whole idea of practice, not perfect, is really a new take on practice makes perfect. Now, we took that, blew that out of the water and said, don't confuse the two. Practice, not perfect. Don't confuse that with practice makes perfect. Now, practice makes perfect is a phrase that's been used, believe it or not, I looked this up, since the 1500s. The 1500s. And it is true when you apply it to maybe learning an instrument or coming close, not maybe not perfect, but as good as you can be, or playing a game, that practice is important. And even the social scientist, if you haven't heard of him, his name's Malcolm Gladwell. He wrote a book called Outliers, wonderful book. And he puts out this theory that it takes 10,000 hours of doing something to achieve mastery over it. And he talks about, you know, some of the folks in the tech sector, you know, people like, you know, Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, and how that 10,000 hours of mastery applies. If you haven't read the book, I actually would highly recommend it. It's really a good book. But practice makes perfect has been used for hundreds of years, and the first time it was documented, its use in the United States was by John Adams, our second president. He wrote and mentions practice makes perfect. So it applies to a lot of things, but it absolutely does not apply to faith. Practice makes perfect has nothing to do with faith or even following Jesus. We are told to practice his teachings, not perfect them. It's a big difference. Nor are we to practice them until we are perfect, because I will tell you this morning that a theology of perfection is A, impossible, and B, actually excludes the need for Jesus. If there's a way we could become perfect, we would not need the cross. So a theology of perfection is absolutely out the window. If we could do everything that God would want us to do, or to put it a different way, if we could live the way that God created us, we'd have no need for Jesus. I mean, it's not like Jesus is saying at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, just do these things and you'll be fine. It doesn't say that. Not at all, as a matter of fact. Putting something into practice does not equate to getting it right all the time. You know, being perfect. Besides, I mean, put it this way. Even if you could, like you say, okay, I'm going to put all of Jesus' teachings into practice in my life, and I'm going to read the Sermon on the Mount, I'm going to memorize it, I'm going to do all the things that Jesus says is good for us to do, and you could do that. Even if you could do that, it doesn't excuse the failures of our past. We would still, even if we could be perfect today, which we can't, but even if we could, we'd still need to settle the debts from our past. On top of that, that's not even the summation of the Sermon on the Mount. I mean, that's not even what Jesus is talking about. He's saying, look, he says, if you put these things into practice, you will be able to weather the storms of life better than those who don't. In other words, Jesus knows we're not going to ever be perfect. And he says, I just want you to know that if you listen to me and you follow me, life isn't going to be easier, but you're going to be able to cope better. Why is that? Because he says, essentially, to follow me and to listen to me and to walk with me is to build on a foundation that is immovable. Or, to use a naval term, we've anchored ourselves to Jesus when we try to live like Jesus and not become Jesus, because we can't. He's like, follow me, listen to me, walk with me, and you'll be able to live through the most difficult times and come through it better than someone who doesn't. Practice living. I mean, if you just really kind of glance at the Sermon on the Mount, what you see is practicing living a life of love, a life of compassion, and not being so judgy about everything. Now, really kind of fun part about this is Jesus, but it's your choice. He's like, I'm telling you the benefits of walking with me are, he says, but you don't have to. You can do your own thing. And he says, but just so you know, this is what doing your own thing will get you. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like the foolish person who built their house on the sand. The rains came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash. I mean, it's not a newsflash, right? There's a constant in this story, in this summation. And there's a constant in real life, too, is that whether you follow Jesus or not, the storms of life come. Like, that's what Jesus is pointing out here. We're not immune, you know that, to the struggles of life just because we have faith. But he says, boy, you'll be able to cope better. You'll find a source of strength you don't have within you by following me. And when I think about the storms of life, we've all had them or have them, sometimes they blow in from somewhere else, and sometimes we're our own ecosystem, and we create our own weather. I mean, I can't help but think about this last week, the reports of further revelations about abuse in the Roman Catholic Church. I mean, it's not like they're the only ones. It's just that news story came up. It's ravaged innocent victims, children. It is a self-induced storm to try to hide it and allow that behavior to continue. They created their own weather on that on a large scale. Once again, not picking on them. The church, larger church, has issues. But when you try to hide from it, it makes things worse. Hiding such things can't. Just so you know, things can't be hidden forever. We can't hide from self-induced storms. And I will tell you, it's not even a spiritual truth. It is a universal truth. Secrets don't remain secret. Now, God expresses that in 1 Corinthians. God will bring to light what is hidden in darkness and expose the motive of human hearts. That's a universal truth right there. It has nothing to do with being a Christian. And if you don't believe secrets don't remain secret, you haven't been watching the news over the last year. I mean, I don't want self-induced storms. I know you don't either. That's why I think this is really great. Jesus encourages us to follow him and put into practice his teachings so that we can probably eliminate half of the storms of life, the ones we create. Man, then we only have to deal with weather that is external to us and not self-induced. Those are hard enough. I don't need to create my own weather. But yet we get a peek into what happens when you don't. We go back to a time before Jesus. The leadership of Israel, its king, its royal court, its priests, were already in exile living in Babylon. And they were in exile because of self-created storms. Not only that, but God had been giving weather reports saying, you gotta change what you're doing, and they didn't. And even when they didn't listen, what happens? But God sends them a prophet, a leader. What does that tell us? God never abandons his people, even when they do wrong. And so God paints this interesting picture. You heard it, but let me refresh your memory. As for you, Ezekiel, your countrymen are talking together about you by the walls and by the doors of the houses, saying to each other, come and let's hear the message that has come from the Lord, meaning Ezekiel's going to preach. He says, God says, my people come to you as they usually do, and they sit before you to listen to your words, but they do not put them into practice. There's that word again. And then he continues. With their mouths, they express devotion, but their hearts are greedy for unjust gain. Indeed, to them, you are nothing more than one who sings love songs with a beautiful voice and plays an instrument well, for they hear your words. It's like the words tickle their ears, but there it comes again. They don't put it into practice. So God paints this picture for Ezekiel. It's like they appear to be faithful. They come to hear the word of God, especially from a prophet, but it was like entertainment for them. They didn't take it to heart. So if we were going to like translate that into our context, what God is saying is this. He's like, coming to church doesn't make you a Christian any more than sitting in your garage makes you a car. That's my translation of that, okay? But what's really poignant about this in the context of history is these words were given right before the destruction of Jerusalem and its temple. God had been calling the people to practice his words, to put into practice and to walk with God, and they just been ignoring, and they didn't, and he's like, this is what's going to happen, and it did. It was a storm of their own making, because God was like, you know, full gale warning folks, and they just weren't listening. So where does that leave us? Jesus invites us to practice living life with him and with each other. I mean, that's why we gather together, right? And what I find even better about this is that this isn't about things to do as it is about how to be. Okay? Not about things to do, but how to be. And just generally, be loving. Be compassionate, be merciful, be consistent. By the way, that's another word for have integrity, be consistent. But perfection is off the table. These aren't things you accomplish. These aren't things you gotta check a box and say, done. These are all a work in progress. But they're also, look at all these things. They all happen when we are in proximity to each other. It's hard to do any of those things when we're not like involved in people's lives. See, God doesn't have the expectation that any of us will be perfect at all. I mean, that's why Jesus came to us. But what he wants for us is to fully experience the acceptance of God through forgiveness. And so this week, what a crazy week. I can't help but think about, when I'm talking about all these things, is think about the two American icons who died this week, or this past week, in their funerals. I mean, noteworthy individuals. Aretha Franklin, known as the Queen of Soul, and unbeknownst to me, except when watching parts of the funeral the other day, that just by her presence as the Queen of Soul is that she was an activist, paving the way for other women just because of her voice, but also because of the color of her skin, also advancing civil rights. I mean, a legendary musician, but also working for the betterment of society. I mean, I can remember the first time I saw her, and I'm probably later than most, but I remember really noticing her for the first time when I saw the movie The Blues Brothers. right there in the diner, singing. So I watched her funeral on Friday while I was writing this message, and the outpouring of love and respect for a woman who never let celebrity get in the way of treating people right. You're like, it's a good message. Now, yesterday morning, I watched the funeral of Senator McCain, the maverick of the Senate. So we have the Queen of Soul and the maverick of the Senate. And if you knew anything about him, you would know two things. One is he had a temper, and he was a person of integrity. And when he got things wrong, he would go back and make it right. He would apologize or said, I made a mistake. He never tried to cover his mistakes and hide them. He wasn't perfect, and neither was she, but he stood for what he thought was right. And most of the time it was about the abuse of power and the equality that all of us should have. And then to watch President Bush and President Obama speak at his request touched me. To hear them speak shows us that people can come together. It gave me hope for the first time in a long time as it pertains to me looking to the east towards our nation's capital. Our country is better because of the lives of these two people, right? I think so. But in their passing is what reminds me of what's most important. A life that is lived and practiced in community. That's where our foundations are strengthened, when we live life together and practice love. Amen.